Welcome to Conversations in Grief, a podcast from Anam Cara, an organization set up by bereaved parents to help themselves and all bereaved parents cope with their grief and loss and journey on. I'm Sam Whelan-Curtin, and in this second series of the podcast, we'll be hearing from parents as they share their own unique stories of their children and their journey through grief. In this episode, we will be talking about the death of a child at birth, with Martina as she tells us about her son Ben and her family's journey. Welcome, Martina. Can you introduce yourself, your family, and tell us about Ben?
My name is Martina Woodlock, and I'm married to Kieran, and I have two daughters. So Katie is 16 and Sophie is 14 and a half. Well, Ben was my firstborn, so he was my first child. I had a fantastic pregnancy with him, and he was a little bit of a surprise baby because I literally had, myself and Kieran had been together for a very long time, and we got married and we discovered on honeymoon that I was pregnant. So Ben was to be the bit of a joke about, you know, not unplanned pregnancies as such. But anyway, Ben was born on May the 23rd, 2005. And I got into difficulties when I was delivering him, and a lot of things went wrong. So when he was born, he was not breathing, and it took them about 20 minutes for him to breathe again. So I was actually unconscious because I'd had an emergency section. So when they woke me up, he was in the pediatric unit and he was in an incubator. So I only got to see him for a couple of seconds. He was really struggling on his own, so he couldn't breathe on his own. He was on oxygen and linked up to a lot of machines. Obviously, I'd been given an anaesthetic, so I wasn't really aware of everything that was going on. I just knew when the pediatrician came in to me, and I said to her, I don't know why I knew it was a boy, because I didn't know in advance. And I just said, where's my son? And she said, your son is born, she goes, but he's struggling. And she said it was the worst case she'd seen in a long time. He was covered in meconium and he was really struggling. So I just said to her, I wanted to see him. And I passed my husband, and he was in a dreadful state. He'd kind of been left, everything was very fast and moved at the last minute. And he'd been left in a room on his own. And he just called a friend to come and help him. But he just said to me, he had to give him a name. And she hadn't discussed a boy's name. And he said to me, I called him Ben, is that okay? And I said, yeah, that sounds perfect. And I literally just got to touch his feet, and then I was taken away. But he lived for 13 hours. He was taken away by air ambulance during the night down to Waterford. And Kieran came back, I think, that morning about 7. And they had brought Ben in to me before they took him in the air ambulance, and he was in a big unit. And I just said to them, just please save my baby, just take him and I'll see him tomorrow, you know. But the next day then they tried to stop me leaving the hospital, unfortunately. And I just told them, take everything out, drips, everything they had. And I said, I need to see him. But unfortunately, while we were traveling, I was traveling in the ambulance and Kieran was traveling behind with his brother. He passed away. He struggled from the minute he was born. He had seizures, everything, all his organs shut down. So I suppose when I first got to see him properly, he had already passed away, and they put him in my arms, and you know, they said he wouldn't have had a quality of life. And I suppose I did say to them, you know, I understand, I wouldn't want him like that, but sure, really, I would have taken him with no head, you know, that sort of way. Yeah, it was tough, you know, and we had to hand him back then because he had to have an autopsy. And so I returned to Kilkenny, and he was returned to me then a couple of days later. It was a very short span of life he had, 13 hours. I got to keep him in the room with me. I didn't allow him to be taken out. And I went home then about 2 days later. I think I went home on, that was Tuesday, I went home on the Friday. And we kept him with us overnight that night, just myself and Kieran. And then we had to put him in his little coffin on our sitting room table. That was a hard one.
It was really hard. It was hard for all our family. I suppose he was so loved before he was born. As I said, he was my first and I was 34, so I wasn't young. It was just so shocking that you could walk out feeling so healthy and so safe and it all go into chaos. But I think just having him there that one night made him feel that he was part of our house and our home. We buried him then that later that day, but so many people came to the house, you know, and I remember writing in a little card for him, little notes and saying, you know, how much he meant to everybody and how what an impact for living 13 hours. And his impact was just huge. You know, so many people contacted me or wrote me letters or called me. So it was tough, you know. His little life was so short, yet here we are 17 years later and he's, you know, still a massive part of our lives, you know.
Can you talk to me a little bit about that love? There's so much of Ben in your family, I'm sure.
At the start, I would have been nearly aggressive about letting people know that he existed, and I'd been horrified if someone said he didn't. I suppose it depends on the situation now. I'd be less if people asked me that horrible question for any parent who's lost a child is, you know, how many children have you? That's always the hardest question. Before, I would have always said, oh, I have three children and I have two living. Maybe I'm not as aggressive about it now. I'd be more cautious of who I'd say it to because I understand it can make people uncomfortable. But when you've lost a child, you're so scared to leave them behind. You know, you're so scared that you're not honouring their memory by not mentioning them to somebody. But in my family, he's mentioned all the time. You know, his picture, we have a window with his picture and there's gifts from family and, you know, little ornaments and candles and 100 things from Anam Cara. When my girls were small, we talked about him every day. They said their goodnight prayers to him, you know. We joked about him sitting in the car, you know, when the girls would be fighting, we'd say, you know, and I'd say, don't hit Ben now, you know, he's in the middle. And because they loved that, they really did. And every day, he is part of our lives every day. And, you know, he's mentioned in both sad days and really jokey days where we would say, like, imagine what he'd be like here now in this house with nothing but women in it. And my poor husband, at least he'd have an ally, you know, and my own family and Kieran's family always honour him and remember him. Lots of people have come and go, I suppose, in those 17 years. Friends that have forgotten sometimes. And, you know, that can be hard. I understand they're living their own lives. But sometimes it's hard because, you know, which of their children would they be able to not talk about? You know, yeah, no, he's a part of every single day of my life. There's not a day when I don't think about him.
Can you take me back? Grief is such a journey over time. In those moments you mentioned the funeral, those early days, early weeks. What is that grief like?
It's so overwhelming. You just don't feel like you're part of the world, you know, and you don't want to actually go back into the world again. You feel like if you just stay where you are, I suppose he'll never leave you. And it takes a while before you find the strength to step outside it. You know, initially, all I wanted to be was with my husband and he just wanted to be with me. And because at the time, Ben was our only child, you know, we had nothing else to kind of focus on except each other. And, you know, even family sometimes try to get involved or, you know, be around us more. And sometimes we just wanted each other. You know, we would shop out of Thurles to be away from people. Because one thing I suppose we found difficult was people looking at us like victims. It was just hard to take sometimes. And sometimes you just wanted to be free of that. The grief at the start is just so overwhelming. And then you begin to start moving out and you begin to start doing other things. And you laugh the first time and you feel guilty. And then it becomes a bit more commonplace. You go back to work. I remember going back to work and I'd say, my poor boss, he was so kind to me. I mean, I would cry at the blink of an eye, you know, and I would just walk away and he was so understanding. But it's not that the grief ever gets any less. It's always there. It's just that you learn to build your life around it. It's like, I suppose, a shell. You just manage to keep it in a little smaller place and your life does begin to build around it. And, you know, you go on to have your job and your, obviously we had two more children afterwards, thank God. And, you know, everything, you realize life still goes on. And, you know, even when you wanted to step off at that time, because that's what we had to do to survive. We just had to step off the world for a little while. Some people need longer than others. Some people are fine after a couple of weeks. Some people it takes a month or a year. But, you know, there is no defined time. And I could have been fine. And maybe after I had my girls, 2 years down the road, 3 years down the road, there was days where I was just ready to just bury my head again. And that was okay. And even now I would have days like that. And I always call them my Ben days. And if it's bad enough, I would just take that day off, or I will just say, I can't do this today. I need to just chill and be with my grief.
And that's something really important that you're doing for yourself in that coping. Can you talk to me about what you found useful to cope, particularly in those early moments?
I suppose what we did was we found the time to see the beauty in other things. My husband was terrible for trying to drag me out of myself and, you know, show me, and he'd tell me, oh, isn't this beautiful plants outside? And we had a big garden and a few dogs, and they kind of kept us going. You know, sometimes even just to get up, because the dog was crying to be taken out. It was just a simple thing I had to do, just to get up every day and go out. And then friends were so kind, and family coming with food and looking after us. You kind of felt you had to for them. And while you were doing that for them, you were helping yourself, to be fair. There wasn't a lot, I suppose, available when Ben first died in the line of counselling or anything like that. And I was afraid. I was really afraid to go to counselling. I was always afraid that if I started to talk about it, that I would go in such a deep hole that I wouldn't be able to come back out. And it took me, I suppose, until I went to Anam Cara after about six years, because I went with a friend and I found it such a relief that now here I was 6 years down the road and I was actually able to talk about Ben again with people who understood me, people who didn't judge me, didn't think, oh, I should be over it, or didn't look at me when tears were flowing down my face and think, you know, it's time, you have to move on, you have to do whatever you have to do. It was just such a safe haven that I can laugh, I can joke, I can cry, I can do whatever it is, and there's not one person in that room that doesn't understand.
And it's in that room where there's that shared experience. And I mean, all grief is unique, but parental grief in particular, loss of a child, and of course a loss so early.
Very unique kind of grief in that you're not just grieving your child has died, you're grieving all the things you're going to miss. And I found that very challenging throughout the years, especially after I had my other children. So I had Katie after only 13 months after Ben died, even though I knew she would never replace him. And very quickly, once she was born, she was a different person to me. And then I had my other daughter about 18 months after that. But every step, especially with my first daughter, Katie, every step that she made was joy for her, and I would cry. I'd say she probably saw me crying for the first 12 months of her life, because every little step she did was one I saw that he didn't get to do. Starting school, first communion, all those little challenges, all those new little things that you never got to experience. So the loss is continual. You're not just grieving the loss of the baby, you're grieving the loss of their life. And that's huge, because I remember saying it to people that I've spoken to at Anam Cara meetings or different social occasions or whatever. I would be jealous of somebody who has lost a child later, even though I know the pain is no different, but they got to have that little bit of time. They got to see their child grow. You know, the things that hurt me most is I never heard his voice. I never heard him cry, and I never saw his precious eyes. I don't know what they were like. So all those little things I feel I've missed so much. Even now, here we are 17 years later, and I'm thinking he'd be in Leaving Cert now. So all those little stepping stones. And I see all friends, children, and the same age group. And there's days the tinge in my heart is so hard. Or I'm working with teenagers of that age group now, and I see what he could have been like. Would he have been a really challenging child, teenager, like most of them are? You know, but of course you can put him on a pedestal and say he would have been perfect. And I even have the loss of the feeling of missing having a son. There's a kind of a relationship with a mother and son sometimes that can be so sweet. And I always regret that I don't have that.
There are so many pangs like that, those moments of pain, as you describe. And all these years later, as you've been on that grief journey, how has it evolved? Those feelings, I know they're still there, but are they different than they were at the start?
At the start, you are kind of blaming yourself because, well, what could I have changed? And if only. So there's a lot of if onlys. And as time moves on, I suppose you begin to understand that it wasn't your fault and the problem was nothing you could have done to change the outcome. It's still as unfair as you know, it was at the start, but you learn, I suppose, that things happen. I don't believe they happen for a reason, but they happen. And, you know, there's lots, especially when you meet people at, you know, meetings like Annam Car or any of the other meetings, that you see people who are in the same pain as you, you know, and they've all had losses somewhere or another. You try not to be judging yourself anymore. I think that's probably a harsh thing. You kind of, you do judge that, oh, why couldn't I do this and why? And you can be very tough on yourself. I'm not as tough on myself as I would have been at the start. You know, I do realise there was nothing I could have done. Losing Ben was the worst. It is and is the worst possible thing that could happen in your life. And, you know, I always say, I don't think I'll ever experience the pain, same sort of pain. And I hope I never do. You know, and I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy.
You mentioned earlier about growing around the grief. Can you talk to me about that?
The grief is still there, but I can step away and I can work around it. In my mind, it's like a big ball and the grief is right there in the center. It's like your heart and your body pulsing away. It's right there and you could fall back into it at any time. But because you've built your life around it and you might have built strategies for even coping with those hard days, I give in to those days. It might be once a year, you know, even on Ben's birthday, we just give in to that day. That's our day. And if people don't like it, well, tough. And you do develop a little bit of an exterior to say that, well, I'm going to talk about my son and I'm sorry if it makes you uncomfortable, but it's important to me. And I think that's how you work around your grief. You just build that big, wider and wider circle of life. The grief is still in there. But sometimes the grief is, it's not as hard and it's not as, the memories are softer. You know, as I said, I don't have many memories. My memories of Ben are while I was pregnant. And I have those. I have remember those kicks. I remember those flutters because it was so important. It was only afterwards how I realized how important those little things were while I was pregnant. That to somebody else, it means nothing because you had the child at the end and you have so many other memories to build. But with Ben, they were my only memories. And now I have those. I can keep them. They're mine forever, mine and my husband's and my girls. You definitely find a way to build right around that grief. I think you have to allow yourself that time that if it's really hurting and you really need to, just have that day, have that minute, have that hour, whatever it is. Sit back and let yourself have it. And if the tears come, if you need to just go out and scream, I've done that in the middle of a field. If you just need to do something nice for yourself, you know, well, then that's what you have to do.
You've been touching on that life that you have now. Can you tell us more about that and where Ben is in that life?
Funnily enough, he is a huge part of my life and where I am right now. When I had Ben and my other children, even, I worked in a different industry altogether and I loved it, but I suppose because things had changed, I felt I was changed as a person. I started to do things for Ben. So he was my inspiration for doing things. I always felt, well, he couldn't get to do this, so maybe I should do it. So he was my inspiration for going back to college and then my inspiration for studying to become a teacher. And I suppose I was very drawn to teaching teenagers, generally around his age, and children with difficulties and, you know, social issues. And because I suppose I have a lot, I had so much extra love to give, even though, you know, you give it to your own children, it's different. And I feel I succeeded in spite of everything because of him. And that's how he's just a huge part of my life, because he gave me, in some ways, he gave me the courage. I probably would still be doing the same job I was doing had Ben lived, because I wouldn't have thought there was any reason for me to do anything different. But every step I've had, and every time I struggle with something, I feel like, well, you know, he didn't get the chance. So stop feeling sorry for yourself and just get on with it. I do feel he gave me the inspiration to be the teacher I am, to be the caring person I am, to be able to, especially, as I said, I work with a lot of teenagers his age, and I try my best, you know, to see what he could have been, you know, and what he would have been like. And I would like to think that somebody would have helped him.
It's a beautiful tribute to him in the work that you do. For parents who are listening, particularly for those whose child died early after birth, as Ben did, what message would you want them to take away from your and Ben's story?
I'd like them to know that they will survive. They will get through this. It might feel right now that there's no way forward, and that they're trying to grasp at things, and they're trying to understand what went wrong, or what, why, and the doubts. Everything is there, but they have to allow themselves that time. They have to do what works for them. You know, there's no point in listening to what other people tell you, well, you should. There should be no shoulds. That's really important. It should be just what you want to do. And if you don't want to get out of bed on a day, that's okay. Go in under your bed, put your quilt over your head and have your day. And as long as you find that you're able to step out, and the next day, every day that you do something more, you're achieving and you're beginning to come back into the world. Because losing a child at any stage is difficult, but losing a child, a baby, as I said, you're losing all that hope. So many people are waiting normally when you're having a baby and the big event, and everyone's talking about it, and it's just, oh, you know, what's going to happen, what you're going to have, and oh my God, they're going to be a nightmare, and you're not going to have sleepless nights and all these. And then when you have a sleepless night when your baby's gone, you're wondering, you know, what is the point of me being? You just don't understand, I suppose, why life has done this to you. There's no real reason why. It's just so unfair. It's so not right that your baby has passed or your baby has died for any reason. But you need to give yourself time. Don't rush. Do it in your own time. Make sure that you look after yourself first, and maybe your partner, or if you have other children, they're your close knit. And then you can start working out, but make sure that you get all the support. Take all the help you can. When people offer you help, take it. I remember friends coming to my door, and particularly neighbours, and they would leave food at the door, or they'd, you know, knock on the door and they'd say to me, you know, do you want to talk? Do you want me to come in? And if I said to them, I just want to be on my own. And they were quite happy to accept that. Not everyone will. Well, you have to find the strength to say, I just can't talk today. I just need to be on my own. And I think, you know, every day is a little step further. And you should be looking at it at the start, day by day. Forget about next year, forget about next week or next month. Just one step at a time. And definitely find someone who will listen to you. You know, if it's your friend, if it's a family member, just someone so you can say your story over and over again. Because the more times you say it, the less hurt you feel, and the less more you kind of understand why you're the way you are and why you feel the way you are. And eventually you might find a counsellor or a group like Anam Cara that are there to listen. And that's what they're there for. They're just there to listen. And that's what you need to do. Take your time.
Thank you, Martina, for sharing yours and Ben's story, and for giving that hope for those listening. We dedicate this episode to Ben's memory. We know the power of hearing the stories of other parents and how this can help in navigating the journey of grief. Anam Cara provides information, resources, and bereavement support after the death of a child of any age and through all circumstances. Holding regular group meetings and information sessions in the Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland, you can find out more by visiting www.anamcara.ie or calling +353 1 404 5378. We would like to thank all the parents who have spoken to us and shared their stories for this podcast series. Thank you for listening, and be kind to yourself.